Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
There are over 15 million DNA profiles in the FBI's National DNA Index. They've been building it since 1998. And it won't surprise you to know that the FBI, even local police, collect DNA swabs when someone's arrested or suspected of a crime, just like fingerprints. But then imagine this, five teenagers sitting in a car in Melbourne, Florida. A cop pulls up to them, asks them what they're up to, and then asks which one of the boys wants to give a DNA sample. One of the boys consents, gives the cops his DNA. No crime's been committed. No crime is even suspected here. Now, the cops hold on to that DNA and store it in a private facility. And what you've just heard is a true story. You can find out about it at ProPublica. It's happening more and more in local police jurisdictions all over America. As police build local banks of DNA from people they arrest, but often from people they don't arrest. And that raises important questions, not just about who's regulating and setting rules for these databases, but also why are the police collecting information on people who aren't suspected of crime? Frederick Heron is director of public safety of the Bensalem Police Department in Bensalem Township, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia. His department started creating its own DNA database in 2010, and he joins me now. Fred, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining me, Stephen Mercer, chief attorney for the Forensics Division of the Maryland Office of the Public Defender. He's been involved in state and federal cases about local DNA collection. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Todd.
So, Fred Heron, how do these locally collected databases actually work in your community?
Well, first of all, let me start by saying I don't agree with what Florida is doing. I've actually talked to Florida. I'm doing a little bit more research on that regarding the circumstances of that particular incident. But we do not collect from juveniles without their parents' consent. So that what Florida is doing is I would agree that's not correct. So please, what the media is trying to do now is hang what everybody else is doing on the one incident in Florida. And we don't really want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. But what we're doing, we started in 2010, is when we have someone arrested for a crime or someone we suspect of a crime, we will ask them consensually for their DNA. We have about a 94% compliance rate where people give up their DNA. Why they do it, I don't know. But it's the same way. Why does someone give us consent to search the trunk of the car when they know they have 7 kilos of cocaine in the back? I don't know, but I've been in law enforcement for 30 years, and they've been doing it for 30 years. And unless the United States Supreme Court tells me to stop, I'm going to continue to do it because it's just another tool in my toolbox to arrest criminals and prevent crime. And as long as the law allows me to do it, I'm going to continue to do that.
So just to be clear, you arrest somebody for a traffic stop or a jaywalk, I'm using examples, and you say, hey, want to give some DNA? And they say, sure. And all of a sudden you've got a window into potentially other crimes that have been committed or maybe even future crimes.
No, we do not ask people on traffic stops. So if you go through a traffic light or a stop sign or a yield sign or whatever it is that you've committed a traffic violation, we do not ask them for their DNA. We're talking about people that we arrest. We're talking about people that we suspect of crime. We're talking about suspects in crime, not traffic stops. Crime, whether it be possession of a heroin bag to homicide. Any type of crime, we'll ask them for their DNA. We do not ask for DNA on traffic stops. Unless that individual is suspected of a crime, we do not ask them. We don't stand outside with the Girl Scouts when they're selling cookies at coming out of the shopping center and ask people, hey, buy some Girl Scout cookies, and by the way, can we have your DNA? No, we do not do that.
Okay, Fred Heron, so in that sense to you, it's like fingerprinting someone, right? They're suspected of a crime, they get booked, fingerprinted.
So every state has different rules regarding collection of DNA. Pennsylvania is a felony conviction state. So you only get the government only takes your DNA if you're convicted of a felony in Pennsylvania. To me, that's not enough. You're not getting the job done. A lot of states have arrestee legislation where upon arrest, your DNA is collected. That's a lot better. We take it to the next step. And you got to remember here, this is all consensual. We're just asking people. We ask people, they confess. This is nothing. This is from the 1800s. Law enforcement has been acting this way. I don't know. I think because it's called DNA and the general public just is uneducated on what DNA is. I think if we called it ABC, people wouldn't be so up in arms about it. It's like a fingerprint.
All right, Stephen Mercer, how does this sound to you? Is this a lot of concern about DNA? And if we called it JFK, people would feel better about it? Or do you see a problem here?
There's a real concern, and the explanation of how Bensalem operates its collection procedures highlights the very real threat to liberty interests that local DNA data banks pose. And here's why. As Mr. Herron was explaining, there is no set rule. It is in the hands of the officer on the street who's exercising discretion about who to collect DNA from. So that level of discretion, without any guidance from regulations or protections or reporting requirements, what we see and what's been the experience of the public defender is that the usual suspects are targeted. And so we see this amplification of the biases in the racial, in the criminal justice system along the lines of race being amplified through these types of unbridled collection programs. And so if we look at who is in that local database, what I suspect we would see is a disproportionate number of people from racial minorities. And but of course, since this is a shadow data bank, it's unregulated. There is no reporting requirement, so there's no opportunity to really look at the data here. And since the dawn of DNA data banks, if there's been one thing that there's been general agreement on, is that given the vast potential for abuse of DNA and the profound privacy implications that are at stake, the close regulation and constitutional scrutiny of the government amassing the DNA of its citizenry is essential. And we're talking about DNA of innocent people here.
Fred Herron, Stephen Mercer is raising one of the key points here, which is the FBI database, which I mentioned at the top of our conversation, is, of course, governed by federal regulations. There are lots of rules about how that database is operated, chain of custody, and everything else. In your jurisdiction and many other states around the country, those regulations don't apply and the rules are different everywhere you go.
Well, a couple of things here. He's a defense attorney, so of course he's going to take that stand, and I'm going to take my stand, and that's what makes this country great. And leave it to someone from Maryland to bring up a race issue. That is not the issue here. I don't know where we jump from DNA to race, but we do not have a disproportionate, and I don't have those numbers, but I can certainly get it back to you. It is not primarily African-American or Hispanic database. That's just a ludicrous statement. But going back to what you were saying about the FBI, they have CODIS. Which is the federal database, what governs the three different databases, a local, a state, and NDIS, a national database. In Pennsylvania, and every state operates differently, in Pennsylvania, if I was to submit DNA from a crime, from a property crime incident, I mean burglary, theft, it takes over 18 months to get those results. That's not acceptable. Right now, I'm doing it in less than 30 days. It takes sexual assault, rape, 7 months in Pennsylvania to process. I can get it back. I have a job right now. I'm getting the results back tomorrow. We submitted it 2 days ago. I'm getting the results back tomorrow. I would attest that or basically say that if you're the victim of a crime, you want the criminal that did that locked up as quick as possible. And if you could be the victim tomorrow, you'd want to make sure that we prevented that crime. And 18 months is not prevention. That's not what they pay me for here in Pennsylvania. So I would agree that the federal database is a good thing, but we're just moving too slow. And you know what? If you're the victim of a crime, you don't want to hear backlog stories. You don't want to hear finance stories. You don't want to hear. So I've contracted with a private lab who's ASCLAD certified, has all the same certifications as a government lab. Plus, Bensalem Township, what you said is officers are out there on their own. We have strict rules and regulations regarding the collection of DNA. We are state certified. We are state accredited, and we are finishing our national CLIA accreditation, which we should get accredited in November. So it's not a rogue cop out there just like with a swab of a Q-tip collecting DNA. That's not a fair statement. We have strict guidelines and policies that are reviewed every single day when we collect DNA.
Stephen Mercer, you hear what Fred Herron is saying there from his jurisdiction in Pennsylvania, but he also says 62 police departments are doing this throughout the nation. And I do want to talk about the Florida case with you for 1 minute. You're in Maryland, but there is this situation in the state of Florida where DNA is being collected from people, sometimes as young as 15 years old, who aren't arrested and aren't suspected of any crime. Now, they are giving consent, but I don't know how a 15-year-old gives consent necessarily. And frankly, I don't know why anyone would consent to give their DNA to police.
Well, whether you're 15 or you're 50, giving consent is highly questionable because you have to look at what is the person being told about the terms of consent. First of all, start off with the status of the person. We're talking about a person who is, whether a juvenile or whether an adult, has not been arrested. This is someone who is approached by the police on a hunch, as Mr. Heron says, they happen to know ahead of time who the criminals are, so they're targeting who they think are the usual suspects. And if Ben Salem has no disparate impact by race in the law enforcement activities, that is the one place in the entire nation where it is such. It's a generally accepted phenomenon that the greater amount of discretion, we see a greater impact, disparate impact by race. That's just a real phenomenon, and it's something that we shouldn't deny exists. And we have to view this new police activity in that context, because this is really a policy decision. So what is someone being told when they're asked to consent? Are they being told that the police are going to collect that and retain it forever? That getting it expunged is really going to be at the whim of the police and any self-imposed protections that the police may have? That by providing this DNA sample, that the person may very well be subjecting his or her family members to lifelong genetic surveillance, to the possibility of future data mining, to look for other information in that person's DNA, that's just not told. And so when you hear something like a 94% rate of folks consenting, you really have to stop and say, what does this consent look like? What does that form look like? What is the person being told? And under what circumstances is that encounter with the officer occurring? Such, is it one where the person feels essentially, as Adam in the ProPublica story recounted, compelled or required in some way to comply with what hardly sounds like a request, but more of a demand for a DNA sample.
All right, let me ask Fred about this, because Fred, you said at the top, I don't know why people consent, but they do. And that's fine. But it seems to me that anyone who gives their DNA to you because you ask is offering to incriminate themselves for some possible future crime not yet committed. I mean, I know that you like it and I get it, but from the perspective of the people that you stop, I can't see why anyone would consent to do this.
I'll tell you why I think the criminal consents to their DNA, because I think of television in many cases. I think the criminals, and we're talking about property crime here, that's really what we're spending most of our efforts on. A criminal, most people think DNA, sex crime, homicide. Well, and their criminals thinking, well, I didn't rape anyone and I haven't killed anyone lately. So yeah, I'll give them my DNA. They don't realize we're looking for property crime. This is already, we've had one suppression issue on this and the judge upheld in favor of law enforcement. The other thing regarding expungements, Stephen brings up a great point. Here in Ben Salem and throughout all of Bucks County, I can only speak for our county, all you have to do, if you gave us your DNA today at an hour ago and you call an hour later and say, hey, I changed my mind, we take it out of the database. I am very, very, I don't know if you would call it conservative or liberal, with the program. I do not want bad case law. I want to lock up criminals and prevent crime. And if I have to back down our program, I do it. We don't take it surreptitiously, and I went through all that. So we're doing everything siding on caution here. I don't know what more we can do, but I'm not going to certainly, if someone wants to give us a confession, what's the difference if we're taking their DNA or obtaining a confession? So I'm gonna keep going in the direction I'm going unless nine people in Washington tell me to stop.
So Stephen Mercer, then before we go, can you just comment on my impression that I had when I started reading about this, that if the cops asked me for my DNA and I didn't have to give it, I would be nuts to say yes?
Well, yes, absolutely, because what you're not hearing about is the very real risk of misidentification that can occur in these local data banks, which are really, truly the repositories of junk DNA. Mr. Heron started off at the beginning by explaining all of the problems of delay and compliance with federal regulations, but what that means is that these local data banks, which are unregulated, invite the junk from crime scenes that isn't allowed in a quality-controlled database at the state or national level. And so when you start creating these local data banks of innocent persons' DNA. And remember, Mr. Herron keeps talking about criminals. He's not talking in this local database are not compelled samples from those convicted, but these are people that Mr. Herron suspects will commit a crime, and so he wants their DNA for some future investigation. Now, that's very different, and so you end up with innocent people in this data bank. So if you rent a car and you leave your DNA behind in a car, you're an employee in a factory and you're handling a window or a door that ends up at a crime scene, or you were in an ambulance and a oxygen sensor was put on your finger and then the next person it's put on was a victim of a crime. There are all of these ways that your DNA can either inadvertently end up at a so-called crime scene, or that the mixture of DNA that is collected at a crime scene erroneously can include you within it. So we have to be very careful about these local unregulated shadow databanks of innocent people's DNA.
All right.
Fred, we got to go.
So quickly, your response.
I said in the beginning, these are all ASCLAD certified. These have the same compliance with the FBI quality assurance standards and forensic testing and DNA. They're not rogue labs. Junk DNA is an old term. All that is we're not looking to see if you have genetic disabilities and medical conditions. We're looking to identify you as an individual that had possibly committed that crime. It's not some lab that just opened up around the corner next to a bodega. That's a ridiculous assertion. And he knows better than that. And these labs we use are certified in Maryland.
I know Bode Labs. They are certified.
Guys, high quality lab.
This is not a question of a rogue lab. This is a question of a rogue data bank. You can put in your data bank what you can't put
it's
in
not
the
a rogue,
national data bank. It absolutely is.
We have,
you
we're
cannot
clear.
Submit. Right. You can put right. into your forensic right. unknown index at the local right. level samples you're, that you cannot put in the national level, and you know that, and don't deny it.
You're comparing apples to oranges now. And
no,
the other
I'm
thing
not.
That we didn't talk
I'm
about
right
is we don't use the DNA as the get-all. We also, after we bring these people in, they confess to the crime. It's just a pointer for us. It's not the end-all where we go and put handcuffs after we get the DNA results back. But this is not a 10-minute conversation. That's the problem.
Okay.
Well, no, you're right about that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you can hear some of the controversy that's embedded in the collection of DNA. Fred Herron, Director of Public Safety of the Bensalem Police Department in Pennsylvania. Fred, thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Stephen Mercer, Chief Attorney for the Forensics Division of the Maryland Office of the Public Defender. Stephen, thanks.
Thank you.